Greetings, friends, and welcome to the What's Right Show. Sam Rogowski here, your host, Nevada's favorite recovering Californian. Yes, those of you listening this morning to Alan Stock heard us make a bit of an announcement, which is that next Thursday, on the 9th of May, at 6 p.m., powered by Salmon Ash Injury Law and Window World, we will have the 2024 Las Vegas mayoral debate live at the Plaza Hotel and Casino. Now, this event, folks, Alan and I have been working on it for quite some time. We're very happy that all the pieces have come together. Cedric Creer, Victoria Seaman, and Shelley Berkeley have all been invited. They're the top three candidates who are vying for the runoff. In the primary, you'll get, we'll winnow the field down to two candidates. And from there, in November, select one mayor for the city of Las Vegas. Now, as you know, here on this program, on the What's Right Show, we are focused on November with a singular purpose, an eye for this election. I've called it one of the most consequential of our lives, and I stand by that. But I also want to, well, it's the presidential race, right? That's what we're drawing attention to. But in fact, also, some of these local elections are very, very important. And the mayoral race, even if you don't live in the city of Las Vegas, if you're in the county, a lot of policy is influenced by this position. And, you know, the mayor's Goodman, right? Oscar and Carolyn have had the position for four terms and have had an incredible influence, an outsized influence on the development of the city of Las Vegas. And I believe a hugely positive one. So, you know, this election is very important. And if you want to hear from the top candidates and what their vision is for Las Vegas, for our community, please show up. Again, it's a 21 and up event because, of course, it's inside the Plaza Hotel and Casino, which is at the end of Fremont Street, downtown Las Vegas. It's a free event, okay? Parking can be will be validated at the event. So go to the KXNT.com website to RSVP so we can save you a seat, okay? And if you can't attend the event live, then please, you know, you can listen to it, obviously. You know, if you can't be there in person, you can listen to it live on KXNT or with the free Odyssey app. So there it is. I will be there. I will be co-moderating the event with Alan Stock. You know, I just adore Alan, and we get along tremendously. We are working on the questions as we speak, and, just prepare to be entertained and informed, okay? It's going to be phenomenal. Now, so we've got the national news. We've got to tackle this because, of course, over the weekend, a couple of things have occurred. First off, I just want to say sort of a big picture response. My gut, even more so than last week, friends, I have this sense that the tide is turning for Trump and against Biden. It's not just the polls. It's the reactions of people that I talk to. It's a assessment based on what is going on right now. Like, I'll give you an example. All last week, you know, we've covered this insanity occurring on our college campuses. And what no one is saying as they breathlessly report on all of these college-aged idiots that are colluding with terrorists and sympathizing with the murder of Jews and you know, walking around with signs extolling the virtues of Nazi genocide, okay? What no one is saying is, what effect does this have on ordinary Americans? And not just ordinary Americans in the heartland, which is what we focus on quite a bit. But what about the swing states? We here in Nevada, we are a swing state, right? The election could theoretically, and I've, you know, done the math for you before, theoretically could come down to what happens right here in this city, in fact. Because when we talk about Nevada, really, I mean, outside of Clark County, yeah, Reno, right, a little leans a little bit blue, but outside of Clark County, most of Nevada is red. So it's really Clark County. It's really everyone within, you know, earshot of this radio signal, this terrestrial signal that may determine the outcome of the election in November. And so I have to think, quite honestly, about my friends, my neighbors, people that I, you know, agree with me, but also the people that largely disagree with my views, and what are their reactions to what is going on right now? Because this is what I've been thinking about all weekend. How do ordinary Las Vegans, who may ultimately decide the outcome of this national election, how do they feel about what they're seeing? Now, I know this community. I love this community. It is, as I've told you before, Vegas is my adopted hometown. I love it here more than I can express in words. And one thing I can tell you is even among my registered Democrat friends, no one here is a rabid communist, okay? That's not what Nevada is about. We are freedom-loving, America-loving people. It's a little bit of the Wild West. You know, we enjoy a degree of autonomy. But this, you know, this is not a state of raging anti-Semitism, all right? That is for sure. And so I look at independents and I look at even registered Democrats surveying what is going on at Harvard, at Yale, at Northwestern, at Columbia, seeing these radicals getting coddled, right? Coddled by politicians, none of whom have a big R by their names. Okay, these are all Democrats that are encouraging and supporting this, shouting the most vile filth. And it's not really even a matter of analyzing, well, what's constitutionally protected and what's not, and what's this? It's, as I've said before, by the way, a lot of this is constitutionally protected, and that's why we love, as conservatives, we love free speech. Because what we are seeing right now, what we are seeing before our very eyes is, I think, a suicide of the left. In their echo chamber, what they are doing sort of makes sense to them. But outside of it, it's vile. Outside of it, it's disgusting. To anyone observing this who has a modicum of common sense and restraint and reservation about things, this is vile stuff and truly disgusting and revolting. And consequently, I think it's turning people against these protesters. What most of us see in what is occurring here are a bunch of young people who are left wing, who are openly sympathizing with the enemies of our country and while cloaking themselves in so-called intersectionality and compassion and non-discrimination, are sympathizing with people, at the very least, sympathizing with people who are advocating for the destruction of an entire race, religion, culture, and country. Yeah, I don't think we're buying it here in Nevada. And by the way, I don't think they're buying it in Pennsylvania. I don't think they're buying it in Michigan. I don't think they're buying it in a bunch of different states that could prove consequential to this election. So we'll get into some of the polling. You know, Biden didn't help himself at all at this correspondence dinner. It's supposed to be light. It's supposed to be funny. But Biden can't help himself because the people that are writing his script, the people that are putting together his note cards and loading his teleprompter, have such extreme Trump derangement syndrome that they cannot see the forest for the trees. And the forest, the big picture, right, in that metaphor, is that the Democrats are going to lose this election. They're losing it as we speak. To make up whatever deficit they have in public support, it will be the kind of cheating that this country has never seen before. It will make the Kennedys blush. And I say that with all due respect to RFK Jr., who happens to also be in this race. Sam Rogowski, News Talk 840, you're listening to The What's Right Show. Okay, we'll get into all of this, unpack it. Lots to cover today. Stay tuned. Be right back, folks.
If you've been in an accident, there's no reason to call a sleazy lawyer.
It's not just about the settlement check. It's about representing your interests and your values.
So call Sam and Ash at 702-820-1234 or visit samandashlaw.com.
Okay, the White House Correspondents' Dinner on Saturday. This happens once a year. And, Trump participated in these as well and took self-deprecating shots, teased people in attendance, etc., entertained people with jokes. Sam Rogowski, News Talk 840, KXNT, you're welcome. I'm here on the What's Right Show, afternoon, 1:21 on the 29th of April. So Biden gets in the center, and it becomes almost as if he is delivering a campaign speech. Now, this is an unusual thing because it's supposed to be, like I mentioned, light. But at one point, midway through his remarks, I'll just give this. Here's one of the things Biden said. And I thought this got pretty dark.
The defeated former president has made no secret of his attack on our democracy. He said he wants to be a dictator on day one, and so much more. He tells supporters he is their revenge and retribution. When in God's name have you heard of another president say something like that? And he promised a bloodbath when he loses again. We have to take this seriously. 8 years ago, he could have written off as just Trump talk, but no longer, not after January 6th. I'm sincerely not asking of you to take sides, but asking you to rise up to the seriousness of the moment. Move past the horse.
To the media. To the media.
Gotcha moments that have come to dominate and sensationalize our politics. And focus on what's actually at stake. And I think in your hearts, you know it was at stake. Every single one of us has a role to play. A serious role to play in making sure democracy endures, American democracy. I am my role, but in all due respect, so do you.
Okay. He's speaking to the media, of course, who are 99% up his a-hole, and I can pardon my language here, but literally, they are betrothed to the Democratic liberal cause. And so telling them, okay, to rise up to the seriousness of the moment and focus on what is actually at stake. These are, this is wildly inappropriate, I think. Biden adds, every single one of us has a serious role to play. And I'm sorry, I obscured some of this with my snickering, but it's wild. What do you think a bunch of registered Democrats, never Trumpers, right, on the Republican side, the handful of Republicans that are in the room, and by the way, a group almost entirely afflicted with the worst case of Trump derangement syndrome, what do you think when they are told that they, for example, need to move past the horse race numbers? Isn't that a pretty obvious direction or directive to stop reporting on the polls, right? Move past not only the horse race numbers, he says, Biden says, but also the, quote, gotcha moments. What are the gotcha moments? Well, the gotcha moments are Biden saying stupid stuff and making up words as his brain struggles to catch up with whatever it is that he's reading off a cue card or off a teleprompter. I mean, it's all the bad stuff. Telling reporters, I have my role, but in all due respect, so do you. And his pitch to preserve American democracy. Now, I've said this before. I'm getting this whole theme that Biden's reelection campaign has of preserving American democracy has a sprinkle of flavor from George H.W. Bush's 1,000 Points of Light. And I say that because no one knew what the hell that meant. In 1992, no one gave a rat's rear end about the 1,000 Points of Light because why? Americans across the country were struggling to make ends meet. So, in a repeat of that, Biden is now in 2024 blabbing about preserving democracy to a bunch of Americans whose lives have changed for the worst in the past 4 years, whose lives have been affected by the fact that their communities are overrun by illegal immigrants, many of whom have very significant criminal intents, whose groceries, gasoline bills, mortgages, rents, etc., have risen precipitously, okay? And at the same time are constantly being lectured about how they're evil and they're wrong and they're inferior just because they are white. Or in the case of Americans who are not white, are watching race, something that most people are not comfortable with having been a front and center issue, making it the number one determinative quality by which people are promoted, put into positions of authority, are viewed by the political class. I mean, we don't have to go far. Every person listening to this radio station, even the people, even those of you friends that, and I love having you, that disagree with me fundamentally on most things that I say, you understand, right, how absurd it is that the FBI is literally running commercials on this program talking about hate crimes, and yet they are doing nothing, and I mean nothing, zero, zilch, nada, to stop the intimidation of Jewish students on college campuses as we speak. You have no moral authority to talk about hate crimes and solicit reports of hate crimes in Las Vegas when the same agency is doing nothing. When students parade around the campus at Columbia carrying signs that say, final solution. When students at USC and Yale and Columbia prevent Jewish students from entering certain areas of the campus that they have declared to be Jew-free. And back to the theme of today's program, which I always like to establish, I just don't think that ordinary Americans are looking at this thinking, this is a great idea, this everything's going fine. People are not looking at this saying, my goodness, okay, this is acceptable. A majority of Americans think this is very unacceptable. And I mentioned this to Alan when I was on with him this morning on Vegas at 8, was here about 8:15 in the morning, announcing our debate coming up next week, May 9th at the Plaza Hotel, 6 p.m., the Las Vegas mayor debate and mayoral debate. And what I was getting at here is, you know, it's strange that common sense Democrats, people that would fight back against, are few and far between. terrible stuff. And people are noticing, 100%. Sam Rogowski, be right back after this.
Personal injury law is constantly changing. Uber and Lyft accidents aren't like other cases, but most law firms haven't kept up.
Don't trust a new case to a lawyer who's stuck in the past. Call Sam and Ash, 702-820-1234, or visit samandashlaw.com.
Greetings, friends, and welcome to the What's Right Show. Happy Monday, April 29th, nearing the end of April here. Boy, this year just powering through. This hour brought to you by Sam and Ash Injury Law, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. Now, I announced at the top of the hour that next Thursday, May 9th, 6 p.m., powered by Sam and Ash Injury Law and Window World, we have the 2024 Las Vegas mayoral debate. It will be live at the Plaza Hotel and Casino in downtown Las Vegas, just at the end of Fremont Street. We'll have and have invited Cedric Creer, Victoria Seaman, Shelley Berkeley, the top polling candidates of the Las Vegas mayoral race, to debate and answer questions. I will co-host that with Alan Stock. If you'd like tickets to this event, head to our website. The tickets are free, but we want to RSVP you a seat. KXNT.com. Again, it's a free event. Parking is going to be validated for the event, so you don't even have to pay for parking. And those of you who cannot attend can catch this debate live right here on KXNT or with the free Odyssey app. So looking forward to that. It's going to be a great evening. And of course, as I mentioned before too, this is a consequential race. We'll have Carolyn Goodman, and here's the thing, right? The Goodmans have two terms for Carolyn Goodman, Oscar Goodman two terms before that, outsized influence on the city of Las Vegas. This is a tectonic shift. And one thing can be said is the stewardship of the Goodmans has been excellent. And so we need to make sure these are big shoes to fill, so looking forward to this debate, hearing from the top contenders here in the race before the primaries. So you do not want to miss this. Speaking of people that are up for election, Fannie Willis has mysteriously skipped the Fulton County DA debate. Now she's arguably scandal-plagued, right? Democrat looking to win re-election. You know the story. She's also aggressively pursuing charges against Trump and his co-defendants. And in the recent, a couple months ago, there was an effort to have her disqualified from the prosecution, and it was revealed that she had an inappropriate relationship with Nathan Wade, the top prosecutor on the case. Nathan Wade and his law firm had been paid north of $600,000 by the Fulton County DA's office. At the same time, Fannie Willis was going on vacations with her paramour, so she was paying invoices to Nathan Wade and his law firm. Nathan Wade was using that money, it seems, to feather the nest that he was creating with his paramour, the very lady who was paying those bills. So, not a good look. The judge determined that one of them needed to be off the case. Nathan Wade stepped down. But now a appeals court is re-examining this. So, she doesn't want to debate. She wants to use her machine, her political machine, to get reelected. There's blood in the water on that case, is my point. And I said this to you earlier. Well, the Georgia Senate is looking into her, is looking into potentially disqualifying her from office. You've got state bar complaints against her because her testimony was ridiculous. And her reelection campaign is wobbly. And, this case is not going to happen before the election. So her intended disruption of perhaps disqualifying Trump from the Georgia ballot. That's not happening. And I think certainly she's come across in, you know, her very carefully followed testimony by everybody in this country look like a complete liar and a fool. So I think, you know, I take each and every one of these cases that they have pursued Trump with. When you look at the two cases in New York, right, you look at the state prosecution over the inflated property values, total nonsense, right? You look at the case now going on, the Alvin Bragg case. It's falling apart. The headline from last week, folks, if there is any, is that even the prosecution witnesses are coming undone. You know, Pecker, who was the CEO of the Inquirer, you know, the newspaper, he was the guy who was doing the catch and release stories for Trump, and they brought him up. This is a former friend of Trump's, a close associate guy that was going in and paying people for their stories and then gaining exclusivity and essentially then not running the story. And the allegation is, or at least they're trying to show, that this is a pattern and practice that Trump did. He used people in the media that were friendly to him to buy people's stories that were maybe negative for him and then simply bury them. But on cross-examination, he came apart completely. And if the judge was a serious jurist, if the judge had any amount of credibility, well, he would, you know, at the close of testimony, if it keeps going as bad as it's going, let me put it this way. This case ought to be thrown out as a non-suit, which is what you do is, you know, if basically at the close of whoever's bringing the case, right, the plaintiff in a civil case or the prosecutor in a criminal case, if you get to the end of their case and they've already put up all their witnesses, if as a matter of law, based on the entirety of the testimony that has been presented, the defendants are either not guilty or not liable, right, depending on the type of case, and couldn't be held liable or guilty based on the evidence presented as a matter of law, there's nothing left for the jury to decide. And judges can either give a directed verdict or declare it a non-suit. I mean, that's what the judge ought to do here. He's not going to do that, right? Because he's an ideologue. So it's, you know, this all this stuff is huge. Okay. So this is what we've got. This is where it's all. And I think, by the way, I think that when you look at the polling, a majority of voters repeatedly think that these cases against Trump are nonsense. They're nonsense. Then you get into the CBS polling that came out over the weekend, and it's all about the states that are going to decide this, right? Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and I would add to that Nevada. So, you know, look at Michigan. Now versus looking back, and what have I always said about this? It's not necessarily about Trump versus Biden. It's now, how do people feel about the issues and about the state of the country? So if you look at now versus looking back, okay, Michigan, current rating, how do you feel right now? Good or bad? Good? 38%. That's hugely underwater for Biden. What about looking back during the Trump years? 62%. Pennsylvania, 38% now. 61% how it was in the Trump years. Wisconsin, 42%. 62% looking back during the Trump years. Now, CBS reporting that inflation is looming large in the minds of voters. Most voters say that there's there's not been any improvement in their state's economy post-pandemic. Only a quarter say that it's improved in the year since. So this is all terrible news. Back to the words of James Carville, it's the economy, stupid. Now, by the way, speaking of Carville, Carville's lashing out at young Democratic idealist voters, agitators, activists. I think he's speaking to some of these goobers that are out there supporting Hamas on college campuses. And he's specifically responding to those young voters out there who say on a matter of principle, because hashtag Gaza, they will not be voting for Biden. James Carville, who was, as you may remember, Bill Clinton's guru, political guru, said this yesterday, live streaming about the situation.
If they get a hold, there will be no government left. There'll be no rights left. You'll live under theocracy. You'll end up Christian nationalism. But that's all right, you little 26-year-old. You don't feel like the election's important to me. They're not addressing the issues that I care about.
You know, Carville sounds angry. I know they call him the Raging Cajun. What he's saying is he's threatening all of us with the fact that there's going to be a Christian theocracy if Trump wins, which I strongly disagree with. But setting that aside, he's saying, you little effing 26-year-olds, you don't think elections are important. They're not addressing the issues that you care about. Well, that's just it. The Democrats have made their bed and now they have to lay in it. They've accommodated all these little blighters for so many years. These are the architects of safe spaces at universities. And now the students that were raised in safe spaces are having kids of their own. And those kids, surprise, surprise, are unbelievably fragile. And an entire system based on promoting people into colleges, into places of, well, positions of influence, are selected based on not their qualifications, not their smarts, not their hard work, but rather on the degree to which they will be reliable activists, color of their skin, sexual orientation, how well they can write a BS entrance essay, admissions essay that hits all the buzzwords. Right? We've got the people right now that are influencing young voters that James Carville's whining about. That whole group of people have been hijacked by folks who have been promoted and given everything that they've had. Every reward, right, given to them has been a consequence of their ideological purity and the extent to which that they score high on the victim totem. Well, I hate to break it to you, Republicans didn't do that. Conservatives didn't create that world. This paradigm is entirely created by the political left, and now the very people that created it have realized, they're not saying it out loud, but they've realized they've created a monster, and the monster is churning on them. Well, I almost feel bad for them. Sam Rojofsky, News Talk 840, you're listening to The What's Right Show, brought to you by Salmon Ash Injury Law, because you deserve what's right. Rarely wrong, always right. Sam Rojofsky here, your host of the What's Right Show, brought to you by Salmon Ash Injury Law, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. Now, we had our Salmon Ash holiday party on Friday. Now, this is might come as a surprise, given that it's April. Let me explain. You know, during COVID, our party got pushed back because of all the BS going on here in Las Vegas. Sisolak was, well, then the governor, and had his head in the sand listening to all the experts. And we tried to have our party, and here was the hilarious thing. they said, well, you can have your party, but you can only be, what, four to a table? And you can't move around between tables. So we're happy to have whatever, how many of us there were, 30, 40 people. But you have to stay seated at your table. And so we said, you know, thanks, but no thanks. Like that's not a holiday party. Like, people have to move around and be able to talk to each other. And we kept pushing it back until it, you know, happened to occur around April. And ever since then, we've just pushed our holiday party to April because everybody loved it, right? Nobody likes, you know, going to a big holiday party, work party, when you've got so many other obligations going on in early December. So we had our holiday party, and Robbie, I've been struggling with my voice. You know, I got sick. I had my strep throat, and I've been powering through and doing the show. And then I traveled 2 weeks ago, and then this holiday party. I swear, my voice is hating me. My throat. I talk so much in a loud room. And Saturday I couldn't talk at all. My son had some water polo events that he some games that he had, and I had to cheer him, and I sounded like a squeaky mouse. I was like, go Daniel. And it just did not come out that way at all. So I'm in Struggle City. Speaking of Struggle City, though, Biden at the Correspondents' Dinner, White House Correspondents' Dinner on Saturday, when I was watching this, because I ended up watching the replay of it later, he was sitting up there. You know, he's got the position of honor, overlooking the crowd there, and they're all reporters. These are all friendly people for the most part, and he's like struggling with his food. Okay, I watched him. He's trying to stab some salad on his plate. That didn't go over well, so then he moves on to his bread roll. Now I understand this was like a hotel, you know, meal, so this is not, you know, this is not a fresh baked, you know, roll, but fine. It was he's the president of the United States. No doubt it was a decent enough roll. He was trying to pry it open. You know, when you take a roll and you kind of break it into two so you can butter it or eat it better. Well, he was trying to do that and he couldn't get it done. Yeah, he looked like a baby otter trying to open the first clam he'd ever seen in his life. I mean, it was bad. It kind of worked with the Colin Jost ribs. He was ribbing the journalist there and Biden. Yost, excuse me. Yeah, so like many of you here tonight, let me say this. This is hilarious because this was a dig at Biden. It was fantastically delivered.
Like many of you here tonight, I pretend to do news on TV. My weekend update co-anchor, Michael Che, was going to join me here tonight, but in solidarity with President Biden, I decided to lose all my black support.
Yeah, well, there you go. So it's funny how you can hear the groans in the background. See, at these events, when the jokes are at the expense of Republicans, the laughter is universal. But when you poke at something close to a Democrat's heart, you get some groans. And that's, you know, that's what you need to know about the press. This is literally the press that covers the White House, that covers the presidency. And the difference between, of course, Biden going to this event and Trump is that Biden's going into a room of friendlies. And when Trump would do these events, I mean, it's like going into a snake pit. I mean, these people all were keen to put a shiv in him. You know the question I keep having? is at what point, right, these dismal approval numbers, dismal, right? Polling, head-to-head polling, absolutely disastrous. At what point, if any, do the, you know, powers that be within the Democratic Party get together and look at Biden and say we've got to do something different? Because you've got to think it has to be an incredible amount of panic at the highest levels of the Democratic Party right now. You have some thoughts on this. When would be the exact moment that they were going to do that? I'm not saying that they will. In fact, I predict it's likely that they won't. But when would they do it? And who would they replace him with, more importantly? Sam Rogowski, News Talk 840 KXNT.
If you've been in an accident, there's no reason to call a sleazy lawyer.
It's not just about the settlement check. It's about representing your interests and your values.
So call Sam and Ash at 702-820-1234 or visit samandashlaw.com.
Greetings, friends, and welcome to the What's Right Show. Sam Rogowski here, Nevada's favorite recovering ex-Californian. Grateful to have you with us here today. Happy Monday. So, according to CNN, Biden is up against nostalgia. Can you believe this? Nostalgia for Trump's first term. CNN's saying that Trump is showing progress in gathering the Republican Party around him, in spite of the trials and tribulations that he's facing. This is great. They're citing Bill Barr. You know, I mentioned to you, I saw a former attorney general a few weeks back in Orange County, had a chance to chat with him a little bit. They're saying even former Attorney General William Barr, who once said Trump shouldn't be near the Oval Office, told CNN he'd back him. I told you that here on this program. I said it weeks ago. I mean, Barr had a comment. What, between Biden and Trump? Are you insane? That's not, he's not a fan of Trump's, but he's certainly not voting for Biden. And that's just what it is. CNN reporting just over 6 months before the election, a volatile political climate is throwing up multiple tests for two flawed candidates. Yeah, the problem is, let me say this, the problem is that even if you accept that CNN is dismissing both Trump and Biden as flawed candidates, one of those two, their flaws are being felt in the moment, in real time, now. We have this thing, we human beings, right? And it's actually a survival mechanism. It's something that was developed over years of development. So if you understand sort of evolutionary biology, you know that despite the Democrats' best efforts to have us dwell on all the bad things that occur to us, it is human nature. When you have something, we go through a period of time, even if it's truly awful, to not remember the bad and focus on the good. And this is something that we as human beings have developed over millennium of evolution, right? Just evolving into protecting ourselves from dark thoughts. Okay, so I'm just pointing that out because nobody remembers the bad of Trump today. They remember the good. And it contrasts significantly with the bad that everybody is feeling currently has right in front of their faces with Biden. Biden's a moron. He was a moron before he had dementia, so now he's a moron with dementia. Two, the border's wide open. Three, prices are out of control, okay? Four, people really do not like this politicized targeting of Trump using the DOJ, using the courts, using, you know, the laws of the land. People do not like it. And at every turn on that point, on number four, there's all these examples of, you know, people, there's all these examples of people getting treated differently than Trump. I was looking at this Holiday Inn Express. This is a, it's a small, it's just a small example of it. You're thinking, what are you talking about, Sam? Holiday Inn Express in Washington, D.C. And this property, right, has just in February was reported to have gone into receivership, and then they had to sell it at an enormous loss. Okay. And thing is, the developers there in Washington, D.C. overvalued the property by more than 100%. And it just sold a few days ago at a shocking 80% discount to the debt owed. And who was the only bidder in the auction for this property? Well, the lender. And they bid $18.5 million, and they were owed $83 million. You think the Democratic prosecutors in the city, the District of Columbia, are going to go after these people? You think that the federal prosecutors in D.C. are going to go after the developer? You think there will be any form of justice for the lender here? Who, let's do the math here, $83 million minus $18 million, $60 million disappeared value. Real damages, which of course contrasts with what Trump has been accused of and convicted of in the state of New York, where the lenders all came up and says, no, we weren't damaged. No, we do. Oh, yeah, we do business with Trump again. Yeah, no problem. This is the kind of stuff that Americans are getting hip to. And not everybody's aware of all of this, but they're getting whiffs of it. And this case right now, as we are nearing the election, this case about Stormy Daniels, nobody gives a rip. Nobody cares. Okay, Trump screwed a lady. We don't care, right? It's being, you know, kind of, I'm deliberately trying to be vulgar about it, because let's take it at its worst possible. Trump, a married man, had an affair and then paid her to be quiet. Well, hell's bells, I was around in the 90s, so were you. The morality ship, per the Democrats, has sailed. It has left the port. Nobody cares. Sam, it's just a blowjob, right? That's all it is. We were endlessly lectured about that in the 90s with Bill Clinton. Fine, okay. She was a college student. Doesn't matter. President of the United States, 50-year-old something man, 22-year-old woman. No problem. Okay, that's the standard. I've been told. So who cares about Trump, a real estate developer, messing around with a, you know, washed-up porn star? Who cares? Nobody cares. So then the next thing is, did he steal money to do this? Did he rob anybody? Did he take money from, you know, from the mom and pops that were contributing to his campaign? By all accounts, no. He used money from his own trust. From his own cash. And whether he put it down as a business expense, a legal expense, a payoff, a, you know, washed up porn star expense, which is not a line item in the state of New York, as far as I'm aware, none of that matters. And people just don't care. Hell, even Democrats don't care. They're disappointed at how little this is. So the one case that the Democrats have going into November is this. This is what they're going to tie up Trump with, making him sit in court, missing the graduation of his son, missing his wife's birthday, all these events. Like, you know, the judge recently there looked at Trump's campaign calendar and scheduled the hearing so that he couldn't go to a rally. That's how low these people are. Judge Juan Merchan, this is how low he is. And I am just delighted by it. These people are all so obsessed with Trump. They are so afflicted and diseased with Trump derangement syndrome that they can't see beyond this, and they don't realize that they're actually making Trump look like the victim. And to boot, he's a victim that will keep winning. Meaning, no matter what they throw at him, he somehow still stays in the fight. Americans love this stuff. There's nothing more American, more appealing to us, whether we're Republicans, Democrats, Independents, than a guy that takes the punches and then just gets back in the fight. This guy is Dirty Harry Clint Eastwood. You know, they've just chucked him off the pier, okay? Beaten the hell out of him. And he comes out there with his, you know, with his magnum, and he's ready to start blowing people's heads off. This is literally just heartbeat America stuff. And these nincompoop Democrats keep writing the script for Trump, and they couldn't do it. They could not do it better. If they tried, I'm almost convinced. I don't know what they're up to. So when we come back, what happens? Like, if Biden's not the foil to take this down, at what point do the Democrats panic? What's the timing of that look like? Who do they replace him with? I'm not convinced that they will, but who would they convince? How would they do it, and who would they do it with? Big questions. Let's take a quick break. Sam Marjofsky, News Talk 840. Welcome to the What's Right Show, brought to you by Sam and Ash Injury Law. If this is your first time listening, folks, let me tell you, we have a lot of fun here. 1 to 3 p.m., News Talk 840, KXNT. Hi, welcome back. Sam Marjofsky here, News Talk 840, KXNT, the What's Right Show, your place for common sense conservatism, Monday through Friday, 1 to 3 p.m., folks, Biden is likely going to stay in this race. That is just my sense of it, because he will not, and I say will not, want to, he will not want to give any of this up. It's not just about his freedom, it's the goodies too, right? He's not going to trust handing over the reins to anybody else. Plus, I think him and his family members enjoy the perks of the presidency. So he's going to, in a perfect situation, he dies in office. But let's just say, hypothetically, that Biden decides to step away. The best situation for the Democrats is for him to accept the nomination and then get replaced. And my understanding of the rules within the DNC is that there's really only about 100 people, once Biden has accepted the nomination, that are needed to agree on a replacement. And let me say one more thing here, right? We are very aware that the Democratic Party is not very democratic. We go back to 2016... the selection of Hillary Clinton over the crowd favorite Bernie is evidence of that. People of the Democratic Party, the primary voters, wanted Bernie, and he was winning. And what happened? The various apparatchiks of the Democratic Party, the so-called superdelegates, put their thumb on the scale, and the rest is history. Okay, now, what the Democrats don't want is to have any more cooks in the kitchen. So if they can narrow it down to just the various auxiliaries, the central planning committees within the party, and my understanding is that that's how it would be, that it would be these much more, this would be a smaller group of people, not all of the superdelegates, but a smaller, tighter, more controllable group of Democrats coming in and making a decision on who the nominee would be, the nominee replacement. Now, I am convinced, folks, that the lead candidate here is Gavin Newsom. Now, we've said this before. This is not like revolutionary news, but here's another question I have for all of you. And just follow me on this and tell me what you think, okay? So now imagine Biden drops out or drops dead. Something happens right now. Let's say dropping out. So that would keep him as president, Kamala as vice president. If he drops dead, Kamala Harris becomes president. Now it gets dicey. Remember the story from last week, because it's relevant. This Biden administration, read all of the powerful Democrats in Washington that run Biden, okay, pulled out all the stops to get rid of Karine Jean-Pierre, the spokesperson for the Biden admin, the White House, in an effort to what? To get her to quit. And what happened? What happened? She said no, and they lost their nerve. And why did they lose their nerve? Well, the story in the, you know, in the New York Post was very clear, because everybody they spoke to said, oh, we don't want the optics of ditching, dropping, firing, if you will, a woman of color who also happens to be a lesbian and look like a toilet mop. Well, I'm adding the last part. That's my own color. But they do not want the blowback that they anticipate from firing a woman of color. Okay. So what do they do with Kamala? If Kamala were running for re-election, excuse me, for election, right? Let's say Biden drops dead today, Kamala Harris becomes president, you know, immediately, gets sworn in on a Bible somewhere on Air Force One, you know, kind of a JFK type moment, Lyndon Johnson moment, right? Can you imagine Kamala Harris running against Trump? Can you imagine all of a sudden all attention on Kamala Harris? Folks, I'm not one of these Republicans out there claiming that it's going to be a some kind of landslide for Trump. I think Trump's going to win in November. There's a lot of things that will have to come together for that to occur. I think things are looking good, but I'm not a landslide predictor. But Trump versus Kamala Harris? Oh my gosh. What a win. I mean, it would be awful. And this is what I keep coming back to. If you talk to every Democrat out there who has any amount of power and connection to politics, they will all eventually admit to you that they wish that Gavin Newsom were the nominee. They wish they had Gavin Newsom. They feel that they could win in November with Gavin Newsom. But then I always pose to them the question, what about Kamala? She's the VP. She's the heir apparent. She is being renominated in November as the nominee, as the vice presidential running mate. They can't just drop her. They don't even want to drop the press secretary because of the bad imagery associated with what that would do for the base of the Democratic Party. I can't begin to overstate the extent of political paralysis going on in the Democratic Party today. And I don't want to sound too gleeful over here, but it's an absolutely wonderful thing to watch. They are hoist by their own petard. They've created this mess. They've made this bed. Biden went out there and decided after South Carolina that. To win South Carolina in 2020 primary, you know, made a deal with the devil, and he decided he's going to have a running mate, woman of color, right? He said that. And Clyburn ate it up, and you know, he got the black vote in South Carolina and pushed him over the edge. So goes conventional thinking. And I tend to agree with that. And I want to point out, by the way, and Robbie can back me up on this, back in 2020, on the radio, I was saying, don't count Biden out. I was saying that. I said, don't count him out. Right, Robbie? Everybody was like, ah, Biden's dead in the water. I said, don't count this guy out. He's got a chance. And then after South Carolina, boy, came roaring back. Regardless, he made his bed. He decided to go in for the DEI running mate, and now he cannot get rid of her. And it's stymieing Democrats' efforts if they should want to and need to replace Biden with somebody they perceive to be more competent. By the way, Drew Barrymore, a couple days ago, talking about what they need from Kamala Harris, what they need from her. Boy, this is hilarious. Listen.
I've been thinking that we really all need a tremendous hug in the world right now.
Yeah.
But in our country, we need you to be Mamala of the country.
Mamala of the country. Kamala Mamala Harris, President of the United States of America. Vomit in the mouth. Be right back, folks. Don't go anywhere. The What's Right Show will continue after this.
Personal injury law is constantly changing. Uber and Lyft accidents aren't like other cases, but most law firms haven't kept up.
Don't trust a new case to a lawyer who's stuck in the past. Call Sam and Ash, 702-820-1234, or visit samandashlaw.com.
Hi, friends. Sam Rzhovsky here, News Talk 840 KXNT. Welcome back to the What's Right Show. So there is a story here I want to... Well, I'm... No, the Kristi Noem story is a whatever deal. Her book out about killing her dog, Cricket. It's not defensible. None of this is defensible, and she's out, in my opinion, of consideration for being Trump's running mate. And then on the heels of that, Trump yesterday, according to reports, meeting in Miami with DeSantis. Now, there's a number of possibilities of what they discussed. Yes, yes, yes. Everybody is speculating that DeSantis is going to become or is in the running to be Trump's running mate. I am not entirely convinced of that, and the number one reason for that is that DeSantis really just did not perform well and did not look alpha enough when he was running. He completely folded, and I don't think Trump is going to pick him. I could be wrong. And I also think Trump perceives him as a bit of a radical on the third rail of this election, that is the Achilles heel of the Republicans, which is abortion. So I don't think that's it. But remember, you know, DeSantis still remains, certainly with me and many others, enormously popular. And he's delivering huge wins in Florida. And he is, I think, you know, him and the legislature are the reason Trump is going to easily carry Florida. And why do I say that? You have to give DeSantis credit for cleaning up, together with the legislature, cleaning up the election rolls in Florida. It was a mess. If the election rolls were cleaned up in Nevada the way that they got cleaned up in Florida, there's no doubt that this would turn into a red state in about two cycles. No doubt about it. So, you know, that's, of course, why the Democrats here are fighting tooth and nail to have any kind of accountability in our elections. They characterize what DeSantis did in Florida as disenfranchisement. So anyway, the other, of course, component of this is that Trump would love to tap into DeSantis's donor network. Now, I don't know. I mean, I would think, right? I would think. If I was a billionaire and I had just given DeSantis $10 million, let's say, in the lead up to the primaries, and there are some people here in Las Vegas who gave numbers like that, okay? Maybe not that much, but I'm confident that Bill Foley, owner of the Golden Knights, Silver Knights, etc., gave a significant amount of money in the millions to DeSantis or to his PACs, okay? So I'm convinced that big money went to DeSantis. I'm not convinced that that big money would have at the same time flowed to Trump. It might now. But I'm also, I can't imagine that the people that gave that kind of money to DeSantis don't feel burned, right? What return on their investment did they get? These are people who are very prudent with their dollars. And DeSantis burned, what, $120, $130 million of cash and just was bonfire. I mean, he would have gotten more play with stacking it up in cash and just lighting it on fire. He was like, this is what we're going to do for inflation. We're going to take this currency out of circulation. he would have had a better result with that. So I'm not sure that, you know, Trump needs DeSantis to make introductions for him to the conservative Republican billionaire class in this country. I just don't think that he needs to do that. But DeSantis and Trump are, for their differences, they are political allies, whether they like it or not. And what I see this meeting as evidence of, you know, Trump is a different candidate now than he was 4 years ago. Trump was the hell with you and I'm going to burn it down just to spite you kind of guy in 2020. And now I think he recognizes that he's got to go at this with I'm not saying conciliatory way, but he needs allies. He needs friends. There's simply no reason to not bury the hatchet with a guy like DeSantis. Because at the end of the day, DeSantis is a beneficial player. So that's my 10 cents on it, right? I think this is very, you know, this is a good sign, okay? Now I don't know what will come of it. Trump is teasing, by the way, that he's going to announce his running mate sooner than later. I don't think he will. I think that Trump needs to. He has until the summer to do it. He'll have to name a name at the convention. But if you're Trump, I mean, think about this. You've got this enormous, giant, golden carrot that you can dangle in front of a bunch of people and get them to hop, skip, and jump and sing to your tune. And the minute that you spend that carrot, the minute you say a name, it's spent. It's done. You can't bring it back. And remember the level of rear-end kissing that Mitt Romney engaged in back in 2016, just in the hopes of getting named to the ticket with Trump. You remember that? Trump, of course, ultimately choosing Mike Pence, and the rest, as they say, is history. No, Mitt Romney would have stabbed Trump in the back earlier than Pence. Let's just be clear about that. So Trump's instincts there weren't wrong, but I'm not getting into the... No, I'm not getting into the you know, the... Who was better, right? Pence was better than Romney. That's not the point of it. The point is that Trump recognizes now more than ever what an enormous incentive and thing of value this vice presidency thing is. And what he needs is everybody sort of working with him to getting him through the next few months. If you're running the Trump campaign, folks, let me just tell you, it's, you know, when you were a kid, you know, the advent calendar, and you open the little window on the thing and there's a chocolate or a Lego piece or something there as a countdown to Christmas, right? And the big chocolate comes on the 24th and then you're like, okay, and Christmas, you know, is here. Well, okay, I'm just telling you, Trump, he's counting down the day. Every day, every week and every month that Trump can keep momentum moving, has polls going up for him, has, you know, has Republicans all saying nice, supportive things is maintaining order in the ranks. Every month that goes by is a win for Trump. And so I think, you know, I just don't see him being particularly motivated. That's all I'm getting at. I don't see him motivated to announce today. There's no benefit to it. None. At all. And all the names are still there. Byron Donalds is still in the running, is my understanding. Of course, Vivek Ramaswamy's in the running in spite of all the stuff. There was news a few weeks back that he was out, and it was communicated to him that he was out. I really just don't think that that is the case. Now people are saying that Kristi Noem is out because she killed her dog. And I don't know. I think that this is all... All this stuff is just up in the air, but I think deliberately. So let's take a quick break. The Supreme Court. This is the Democrats are absolutely laser focused on the Supreme Court, and they are looking to delegitimize the court in any way, shape, or form that they can, because while the Supreme Court is not perfect, the left in this country is realizing that the Supreme Court may be the final arbiter in all of this insanity. You know how that whole movement to have Trump pushed off the ballot in Colorado, in Maine, in Chicago, they had a traffic court judge in Chicago try to remove Trump from the ballot for the whole state of Illinois. And it went to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court says, well, this is not a 14th Amendment. It's not how the 14th Amendment works. I mean, it's a plain reading of it. You don't even have to be a lawyer. If you read the 14th Amendment and you had half a brain, you'd realize that this was all nonsense. So the Supreme Court comes along, strikes it down, and from that point forward, the left has been on fire with their efforts to delegitimize the court. Let me explain what they're thinking, because they're talking again about packing the court. Wild stuff Saturday over the weekend. I'll get into it here. We've got to take a quick break. Sam Rojofsky, News Talk 840. You're listening to the What's Right Show, brought to you by Sam & Ash Injury Law, because you deserve what's right. Sam Rojofsky here, News Talk 840 KXNT. Greetings, friends. Grateful to be here with you. Welcome back to the program. Okay, before we get to the Supreme Court news over the weekend, that the student who viciously beat a teacher over a Nintendo game that was taken away from him, he is now 18 years old. Of course, the teacher refused to play along with the requests to just let it go. Flagler County Public Schools in Florida is where this kid went to school, and Palm Coast is the area. Anyway, the 6'6", 270-pound student beat the teacher almost to death, okay? You've all seen the video. 5 broken ribs, severe concussion, loss of hearing. Significant. The kid has been sentenced to, I think, 30 years in prison. He's now suing, get this, the school district for failing to address his disabilities through a proper behavioral plan. You know, some of this, you know, one of the things that they're saying that he had was a mood disorder. A mood disorder. What the hell is a mood disorder? You know, at what point do we stop coddling these kids who have behavioral problems because no one has told them no? And we begin to hold them accountable. See, what we're doing in our society right now, we're making excuses based on just invented disorders brought to us by the mental health professionals that, of course, continue to make oodles of money off of all this nonsense. So we make up mental health disorders, and then these kids get an excuse. Oh, you can't blame little Johnny. He's just got a mood disorder. This is wild stuff. Intermittent explosive disorder. Okay, I mean, so he's not Irish. I mean, that. Okay, I'm not putting down my Irish friends, but I'm saying, like, so he gets angry. Maybe he needs a roundhouse kick to the money by a parental figure. Every adult who made excuses for Brendan Deppa, the now 18-year-old student who did this heinous thing, has failed him. Okay? This kid needed parenting. None of this new age BS that makes excuses for every behavioral pathology. So now he's facing real consequences, and what's he doing? He's suing. Like the little crybaby that he is. Yuck. All of it disgusting, these lawyers. And I say this as a lawyer, ought to be ashamed of themselves. So speaking of lawyers that ought to be ashamed of themselves, Democrats are attacking the Supreme Court here on MSNBC, a robust discussion over the weekend. Screw the rules, let's pack the court. A former federal prosecutor, Ankush Kadori, and Simone Sanders going at it with host Alicia Menendez.
What is left as recourse, right? There's court reform, they're stacking the court. What do you see as the path forward? Because clearly something more structural is necessary.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think actually, as we think about, you know, this administration and its legacy, I think it will go down as having been a historic political miscalculation.
You're talking about the Biden administration.
The Biden administration to not have made a real earnest effort at Supreme Court reform. They put together a commission that produced some report that nobody read. It was not a serious effort to actually pursue Supreme Court reform. And now,
well, I would know because the President Biden, I mean, I worked for him at that time. I was a part of the transition and I worked in the White House. And I know for a fact he himself does not believe that is an avenue that should be explored. You know, Joe Biden is somebody that believes in the rules and laws and the systems.
Well, look, I mean, yeah, I'm aware he has that view. He is holding the wrong view. I hate to say that about the president. He's been wrong about this the whole time. And now this court over the last few years is systematically running roughshod through our Constitution. In just the last few years, they've overturned Roe. They've invalidated affirmative action in higher education. They basically legalized same-sex discrimination. They threw out part of the Biden administration's signature domestic policy effort on the student loan forgiveness
plan. Because it was unconstitutional.
Now they seem poised to issue some sort of ruling that will change the law, which had already been in place for a couple hundred years. We all assumed a president could be criminally charged after leaving office, to now come up with some crazy new doctrine.
They don't like the Constitution. Never forget Barack Hussein Obama talking about this pesky Constitution. If only we didn't have this Constitution. There's a lot I'd love to do. I just can't do it because of the Constitution. That's what this is about. They want to make up law. They want policy coming down from the Supreme Court. They don't want constitutional decisions. Don't get your way. Let's pack the court. Let's put on justices that will look at it our way. I'll put this another way. The handful of, you know, common sense, somewhat common sense, somewhat conservative justices on the court are the only thing that are holding this country up right now. If Ankush Kadori got his way, okay, it would all be over. Andrew Weissman, Sunday on MSNBC with Jen Psaki, says we're one vote, John Roberts, away from the end of democracy.
It's important to remember that at the outset, the court had already given Donald Trump the win that he was seeking, which is the delay of the D.C. trial. He had to be thinking, I'm making this really outlandish argument with ramifications that couldn't possibly be squared with the text and history, the text of the Constitution or the history of the presidency. So what was surprising is that there were justices who actually were taking this seriously. I mean, I know it sounds like hyperbole, but I think your opening is so correct that we are, so essentially, as Neil put it, one vote away from sort of the end of democracy as we know it, with checks and balances, and we are really on the razor's edge of that kind of result, but for the Chief Justice.
Yeah, I mean, one vote away. When you put it in those terms, Andrew, it is very, very stark.
Andrew Weissman, political eunuch and so-called lawyer, actually thinks that this democracy of ours is hanging by a thread because the highest court in this land, charged with determining the constitutionality of governmental actions, for one, is ruling over and over again against Democrats who have absolutely engaged in the most vile politicization of a legal process. These are the same Democrats that want to, of course, have our thoughts, our very utterances, policed, have them throttled, have them silenced. They want monolithic viewpoints. They want to arrest and, in fact, have political prisoners, people who oppose them politically. 12, 15 years in prison for blocking the pathway to an abortion clinic. Nothing, zero time for getting in the road and shutting things down in support for Hamas, a terrorist organization. When you start to square those things away, every one of these losers talking about the end of democracy here, the Supreme Court, Donald Trump, they sound like total nonces. Outrageous stuff. All right, friends, we'll do this all again tomorrow. Great to be with you. Sam at samandashlaw.com is my email, at What's Right Sam on my socials. See you tomorrow. Have a great day. Be well out there.